We are facing a mental health crisis, and it's more important than ever to have access to the support we need. That's why I'm grateful for BetterHelp, the largest online counseling platform in the world. BetterHelp is changing the way people get help with life challenges by providing convenient, discreet, and affordable access to licensed therapists. With BetterHelp, professional counseling is available anytime, anywhere, from your smartphone, computer, or tablet. If you're looking for support, sign up today at BetterHelp.com. Use the promo code SolvingHealthcare to get 10% off sign-up fees. That's BetterHelp.com, promo code SolvingHealthcare. COVID has affected us all, and with all the negativity surrounding it, it's often hard to find the positive. One of the blessings it has given us is the opportunity to build an avenue for creating change, starting right here in our community. Discussing topics that affect us most, such as racism and healthcare, maintaining a positive mindset, creating change, the importance of advocacy, and the many lessons we have all learned from COVID. If you or your organization are interested in speaking engagements, send a message to quadcast99@gmail.com, reach out on Facebook at Quadcast, or online at drquadjo.ca.
Welcome to Solving Healthcare. I'm Quadjo Caramante. I'm an ICU and palliative care physician here in Ottawa and the founder of Resource Optimization Network. We are on a mission to transform healthcare in Canada. I'm going to talk with physicians, nurses, administrators, patients and their families because inefficiencies, overwork, and overcrowding affects us all. I believe it's time for a better healthcare system that's more cost-effective, dignified, and just for everyone involved. Quadcast Nation, we are introducing the one and only Nikki, and I'm really excited to have Nikki on for a few reasons. One, she's part of the reason why I am on any platform, period. She has made some magical things happen. She has created an area where I get to be on, have my own book, have my own radio show, and she is here to talk about the book, to talk about unapologetic leadership, folks. So, Nikki, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Dr. Quadjo. Well, you know, thanks to the mom squad who once upon a time told me, check out this doctor, he's telling the truth. So kudos to that, man. We're here to talk about your book because it's a good book and people should read it. Can I ask you some questions?
Nikki, the platform is yours. You are the hostess with the mostest. I'm here to serve.
Amazing. Well, in this book, you make some interesting points. You say, in this business, the bottom line isn't profit or loss. You say the sick and dying don't care about that. And with that in mind, I want my experiences and ideas to form a template that leaders and potential leaders in other fields can use and adapt to their own circumstances. So what is healthcare and how can people from the outside world relate to healthcare and the kind of decisions you have to make every day?
Yeah, so healthcare, I think a lot of people, when they think about it, is I come into acute care hospital where I'm having a heart attack, I'm having a stroke. I need that treatment right away to save my life. And absolutely, that's part of healthcare. But the part that I feel that we have under-treated or under-highlighted was prevention. The idea of empowering individuals, patients to avoid seeing someone like myself so that they, by working out, by improving the way they move, improving the way they eat, when they eat, thinking about their nutrition, reducing their stress, and creating a sense of community. And this was really highlighted, Nikki, during the pandemic, the importance of these preventative measures. When we saw that a significant amount of people that ended up sick were with preventable disease. They had diabetes, type 2 diabetes. They had high blood pressure, obesity. And if we could modify those things, as we talked about, like the way we eat, the how you move, reducing your stress, creating that sense of community, we would see a lot less sick people. So that's the other aspect of healthcare that we need to consider is the preventative side as well as the acute care side.
I appreciate that you talk about that, Quadjo. You did say that you made a comment during the pandemic. You said, had we not closed gyms, you know, what was it something about closing gyms and how that didn't make sense to you?
Oh, absolutely, Nikki. Like, I understand at the beginning of the pandemic, we didn't know what we were dealing with. So we wanted to be as safe as possible using the precautionary principle. But then we started to see clear factors that led to sickness and inactivity, weight gain, all these factors led to worsening outcomes. And so to me, when you can't have an environment where people can get healthy, they can thrive, they can reduce their stress, they can get fitter, lose the extra weight, this is something we needed to promote. So closing gyms in so many ways was something that was counterproductive. And don't get me wrong, I understand the worry about a disease that was, when you're in close proximity, when you're breathing heavy, is higher risk of contracting it. That we, there's ways of mitigating that. You create gyms that are outside and make sure the ventilation was excellent, keeping people well spaced out. But taking away that outlet for not only improving their overall physical fitness, but also their overall well-being and their mental health, I think was a mistake.
Those are good points you make. I agree with you. I missed my gym. Now, let me ask you, you say often that you leave the ego at the door and you remind yourself, you say, this isn't about me. So when it comes to leadership, how do you kind of stay humble, but also convince people to buy into what you're trying to say?
Yeah, you got to look at what your overall objective is. The overall objective of many of us is not for us to be the center of attention, to be highlighted. It's to serve and to make sure people get the best outcome. So when I think of someone like myself that went into medical school, the huge driver was to help folks. Like, I don't know if you remember this, Nikki, one of the parts of my book in the Hall of Fames was about my pediatrician, Dr. Conradi, who was this amazing human being and is honestly one of the main reasons I got into medical, wanted to be a physician, was, you know, as a sickly, asthmatic kid that often was going into that Misericordia hospital with an asthma attack and being super stressed and my mom being stressed. And this man came in with this unbelievable calming effect, put your hand on your chest, put his hand on my mom's arm saying, like, it's going to be okay. And having that impact on people was something I'll never forget, because as a kid going in scared, wondering you're going to come out of this. But once you saw him walk in the room, you knew you were in great hands. And we, in the book, we talk about the story of him also, you know, treating people on the other side of war. And because he, you know, he knew where his values were. He knew where, what was important to him, and that was helping others. And so when it comes to leadership, really have that North Star of what is my purpose? It is to, you know, for many of us, once again, it's to serve, it's to help others. And we got to put our egos at the door if we're going to do that well.
I like that. One of your leadership points is you say develop a stomach for difficult decisions. And what does that look like?
Yeah, that's a great question, Nikki. It's like I'm in a line of work where naturally you have to make tough calls. You're going to make calls on people's lives. Whether you, if you mess it up, it's going to have a dire impact. And if you're going to be in a situation where you want to lead and create meaningful change, you're often going to be in a spot where decisions are going to be hard. You're going to have to realize there's going to be consequences. And you have to be kind to yourself. You have to be kind to the team around you. This is where that self-compassion and that theme of compassion is so important, because you are going to make the decision based on your judgment. You're going to do your best. And that's all you could do. And you got to make a commitment to learn from the things that you would change or your mistakes. But if you're really going to try and create impact, you cannot fear failure. If failure, you got to accept it as a part of the equation. But the question is, what do you do with a failure? How are you going to respond? Are you going to learn? Are you going to pivot? That's signs of an unapologetic leader. That's somebody that's you want behind you.
You're going to step back when disappointment hits you in the face, Quadro. That's what your book
says. That's why I'm going to step back when disappointment hits you in the face and come back, though. We'll come back in full effect.
Yes, I think everybody comes back better, right? Because you can make mistakes and disappointment will find you, but it just keeps you humble.
Oh, It's such a good point. And again, even, I must say, in medicine, we see it all the time. You think this patient's going to have this diagnosis, and you're wrong. And you think someone's going to do well, and they don't, or they're going to do poorly, and they do better. You got to stay humble, because that keeps you on your toes. That keeps you nimble, and keeps you fresh and ready to come up with the most appropriate actions.
You know, you say something in your book that I appreciate. You say, ask the doers. And I have not heard a lot of leaders say that. So to the leaders listening, I'm sorry, take listen to this. But you say that there was something in the pandemic that felt most frustrating. It was not being empowered as a healthcare professionals. And I guess you didn't feel you were being listened to. And this was like a health scare. So it's funny in a way, scary, really. And you say this can't happen anymore. So ask the doers is like, tell us more.
Yeah, Nikki, ask the people that are in the trenches, people that are seeing, that are in the fight, that are seeing what we're going to deal with. Like in the pandemic, I got extremely frustrated with epidemiologists and people that have never seen a COVID patient, biostatisticians, teachers coming on the news and on whatever platform that was available and coming up with these claims without ever walking into a room seeing a COVID patient. Meanwhile, many of us were in the trenches that were seeing COVID patients and was expressing some concerns with specific patient populations. As we mentioned earlier, the patients that you got to worry about with metabolic syndrome, expressing concerns about racialized communities, and it was going under deaf ears. And the lack of having a platform, like a true platform, that wasn't being amplified, for lack of a better word, was extremely frustrating. It was those that had the most fear and sensational messages got platformed, got more and more press. And that, to me, was not right.
Hey, you're not wrong. I saw the Joe Rogan kind of audience explode also. So people started veering towards somebody who wasn't saying the main narrative, and they were listening to you. I became your publicist because your fans told me to represent you and help you get louder. So I took that as kind of, okay, I think I need to do this, right? Like, I do agree that something you did for people was you were like, don't operate with fear. Don't operate with fear. So you say in your book, do not succumb to fear-based decision-making.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Nikki, it's probably like one of the most important principles that we talk about, because when we are coming from a place of fear, number one, we're tight. Like if I often was talking about during the beginning of the pandemic, when we were seeing our first COVID patients, if you are stressed and envisioning the worst outcomes, you're not operating at your best. You are hyper tight. You're worried about the worst things. You are not nimble. Your thoughts are limited. And at a macro level, when we worry about just making fear-based decisions, we're not optimizing. We're not giving people the best options to try and get through these situations. And when it comes to making our decisions, it really has to come from a place of values, like what's important to us. And this is where I think we lost ourselves. And I think specifically about our kids, our children. One of our most vulnerable groups in terms of the depending on, you know, us to help guide them through their childhood. And we literally abandoned them. We said, hey, you know, we'll take no risk at all. So we're going to close down the schools. We're going to make sure you're masked for as long as we can. And we knew what the risks were. And once again, I'll give you a pass on that first wave. But when we saw that kids were low risk of getting sick, very low risk. Like me driving my kid to Toronto was higher risk than them dying of COVID. When we knew that they were less likely to transmit in those early waves, and we knew about the consequences of like not them and not having a risk of getting more physical concerns, mental health, physical abuse, all these things, and we just said, doesn't matter. And places in our own country, like British Columbia, who had very limited school closures, we wouldn't look to them and say, what are they doing right? We weren't looking to them and saying, what are they doing right? We just said, hey, we think we know better, despite them not having any worse outcomes. And we just ignored it. And to me, this is where that fear-based approach really was a disservice to our kids.
Well, you make a good point about this, Quadro. You talk about how in Canada, we all kind of, we behave just very much in our little micro-provincial place. And then we don't centralize healthcare. Our school systems behave differently. And during the pandemic, we saw that BC was killing it and we were in jail in Ontario. And I don't know. We don't get our life back. Like, I have this running joke. We all got 3 years older, but we didn't do anything. So, I mean, you make a case in your book for mistakes or money wasted in healthcare. Money wasted because we're not asking people what they want and we're not keeping record of what people want. So do you want to expand on that a little bit?
Absolutely, Nikki. This is where we see huge inefficiencies. When you look at the amount of dollars wasted in healthcare related to not giving people what they would want in terms of treatment, I'll give you a more concrete example. I see unfortunately, on a regular basis, someone from a nursing home that is elderly, that had previous wishes that they don't even want to be transferred to a hospital or an emergency room, yet somehow, because of a lack of updated paperwork or poor decision-making, frankly, that patient gets transferred to acute care, they'll, for whatever reason, will end up intubated and on a ventilator, and 2 days later, 3 days later, after we get all our communication on point, we now that patient is allowed to die peacefully, whereas they never would have wanted that because of their extreme deconditioning, their multiple comorbidities in their advanced age. And if you think about an example like that, which would cost the system $15,000, for example. But think about what you could do from a preventative side with that kind of resources. Have people with a personal trainer, someone with expertise in nutrition, like all these things that could improve your health and wellness. And that's just one example. We even look at like the COVID cases. That was $50,000 per ICU admission. And when we knew there was means to be able to prevent them. So tons of inefficiency in healthcare. As you mentioned too, like, we don't communicate well to each other. Like, even Trump, I'll give examples, and there's different medical records in the same city. In my city, there's probably three different medical records at three different hospitals. In Toronto, you can be next door to each other and they don't speak. They don't speak, the records don't speak to each other. Like, that has to stop. And that, in my humble opinion, has a relatively easy solution. You have one choice for an electronic medical record, and everyone's got to stick with it. They do it in Alberta, and it's glorious.
That is glorious. And you know what, Quadro? Like, you make some really good points in your book. I think that people recognize that you are here to just maybe tell the truth as you know it. And I appreciate that when you speak confidently. And when you don't know, you're the only doctor I've ever met who says, I don't know when you don't know. That's cool.
Well, you know what it comes down to, Nikki? It's being authentic. It's part of being an unapologetic leader. It's that authenticity builds trust. When you know this, the person that's in front of you is not going to be filling your ears with garbage. You, when they don't know, they don't know. And I always say to my trainees, there's no reason to lie. If you don't know the answer to a question, to go to a patient, like, think of two scenarios here, right? You're sitting down with your doctor and he's telling you, this is the answer to your problem. He doesn't know, or he or she doesn't know, but he says it confidently, and you find out that they're wrong, okay? What are you going to do next time you have a concern with this doctor?
I'm not going back to that doctor.
Yeah, you're not going back. You're not believing what they're saying. Whereas you sit down with that doctor, even if you feel like they should know the answer to this problem, they'd be like, listen, Nikki, I'm not 100% sure. I'm going to look it up. I'm going to get back to you. But give me some time because I don't want to give you some false information. I'll tell you, most people would take that any day. I'll tell you, I would take that any day, Nikki, instead of coming across with some BS or some false information. So realistically, to be unapologetic, you need to stay humble, and people will find it relatable, and you'll create that rapport, and you will thrive.
I love it. Okay, go one last question. You say, Ben, one of your, you know, unapologetic ways of being a leader is, Ben, be ready to adapt and change course if a strategy is not working. Talk to us.
So important. Adaptability. I mean, even look at it at a practical scale. Look at, what's that company? BlackBerry. Look at Blockbuster. What were they lacking? It was the inability to bend, the inability to be agile. You have to take pride in agility. You have to accept the idea that you cannot stay stagnant. This applies in medicine. We saw it in the pandemic. We had this philosophy that we wanted to intubate patients early, put them on breathing machines early because we thought it would be better for them. Unfortunately, we realized that relatively early on that it was probably causing more harm, so we pivoted. So, I mean, you saw the millions of people around the world that were sick with COVID. Because of that change in approach, guaranteed more lives are saved, significant amount of lives saved. So in any...
That's huge. That's actually absolutely huge.
Absolutely. There was proof that steroids, another example, proof that steroids were going to be beneficial for COVID patients. We didn't wait 2 years. We transitioned immediately, life saved. And so having that approach, regardless of where you are, will keep you relevant, will keep you present. And so have that mindset that we have to pivot when we need to pivot. Have that open mind, not having this like closed mind mindset, and you will be that much further ahead. And our group, we take pride in that, whether it's research, whether it's advocacy. You got to stay nimble, got to bend.
Yes. Thank you, Dr. Quadro. Well said.
Absolutely. Any more questions, Nikki? Did we do okay? Did we do okay?
I think we did good, man. We're good.
Amazing. Amazing. Well, thank you for being a guest host and interviewing me on Apologetic Leadership. And I have a feeling, Nikki, you'll be back.
Well, Dr. Quadro, I want to just drop a little hint that you've made a 28-day course that maybe you should tell listeners about, because I think everyone needs it.
Absolutely. We love mentioning our 28-day reboot. This was one of our ideas on how to simplify how to get healthy. We focus on nutrition. What are the key steps of improving your what you eat and how you eat and when you eat? Easiest ways to move, to improve your health by increasing your exercise, and how to increase your exercise, how to reduce your stress with a huge focus on sleep, and then the importance of creating communities and how we create healthy habits. Because once again, you get inundated with all this information. Should I be fasting? Should I be doing low carb? Could I do this? But we simplify it. What would be best for you? And that's the 28-day reboot. Simple suggestions, simple tweaks that give you the biggest bang for your buck. And before you know it, Nikki could be like banging. You'll be feeling fresh and dynamic. No, sir.
I love it.
28dayreboot.co.
28dayreboot.co.
Yeah.
Sounds great. I'm going to check it out right now.
Better believe it. All right, Nikki. Thank you so much for joining us. Thanks so much for joining us. Remember, unapologetic leadership, you're loving it. You are loving it. Hitting the airwaves. Doesn't really make sense. It's not hitting the airwaves. It's kind of hitting the airwaves, but hitting your bookshelves or your Kindles. Unapologeticleadership.ca. Let's go.
If you enjoyed that, please leave us any comments at quadcast99@gmail.com. Leave a 5-star rating. Follow us on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter at Quadcast. Jump on our newsletter. Jump on our community at quadcast.substack.com. All things healthcare solutions all on one site. Y'all are gonna love it. All right, people, I hope you're feeling a little bit more jump in your step after that episode. Thanks for listening. Talk real soon. Peace.